Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Welcome to The Corridor, brought to you by Realtor Kim Purcell of Sutton Group Masters Realty. Connect with Kim today to find a new home tomorrow via kimpurcell.ca. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative producer Jesse Bell and CFRC's Arts Coordinator Genevieve Hinch. Our top story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter Era McCauley, covering the development of the Welcoming Agencies Declaration by the Kingston Immigration Partnership.
Hello, I'm Era McCauley, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today on YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays at 5 p.m., or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach out to our news team at news@cfrc.ca. Four Kingston newcomer serving organizations have come together to develop the Welcoming Agencies Declaration. Developed by the Kingston Immigration Partnership, the declaration represents a commitment between Kingston Community Health Centers, Keys Employment and Newcomer Services, ACFOME, and Kingston Literacy and Skills to reduce barriers for people with irregular immigration status. The declaration ensures access to support and services for individuals without fear of having their immigration status reported to the Canada Border Services Agency, CBSA, or police for the purposes of deportation or immigration detention. CFRC spoke with Yujir Ku, coordinator of Kingston Immigration Partnership, about the declaration.
So you have a pretty exciting initiative that has just been announced in the Welcoming Agencies Declaration. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that, but perhaps start by letting listeners know, what is the Kingston Immigration Partnership?
Kingston Immigration Partnership was formed in 2009 by a collection of agencies that work together
to make a more welcoming community, Kingston in particular, for newcomers to Canada. So this initiative in particular, we have four agencies in collaboration with Kingston Community Health Centers, Keys Employment and Newcomer Services, ACFOME, and Kingston Literacy and Skills.
What does this declaration aim to do here in Kingston?
There are some folks in our community who live with irregular immigration status. That might be a new term for a lot of folks, but sometimes you'll hear them referred to as undocumented or non-status. These are individuals who will experience significant barriers in accessing especially essential services. And that is what we have seen in the community. There are folks who are afraid to seek emergency healthcare services or seek protection as victims of violence. And we want them to know where they can safely access support without fear that their immigration status will be reported for the purposes of deportation or immigration detention to CBSA or the police.
Studies show that having a regular immigration status can lead individuals to delay seeking health care, support related to gender-based violence or human trafficking, labor protections, and other essential services, increasing the risk to their health and well-being.
Irregular immigration status can occur for a number of reasons. People might have preconceived notions about how someone ends up in this situation, but it can be more nuanced.
Yes, absolutely. A lot of the folks that we see with irregular immigration status might not know that they have irregular immigration status. Sometimes they might have accidentally let some documents expire or just lapse. I know I've left, let's say, my OHIP card expire before, but the consequences are unfortunately very real for a lot of individuals where they might not have noticed the dates and it's expired. For some other individuals, we have been making some changes in Canada to some of our immigration policies and processes so that it is more difficult for individuals to make a claim for refugee protection. For example, in 2023, our Safe Third Country Agreement between Canada and the USA expanded so that it was more difficult for some individuals to make a refugee claim in Canada if they have previously been in the U.S. There is also the introduction of Bill C-12, where it required someone to make a refugee claim within the first year of arrival to Canada.
According to the Government of Canada, Bill C-12 introduced new eligibility requirements for asylum claims made on or after June 3, 2025 to, quote, reduce pressure on the asylum system, protect it against sudden increases in claims, close loopholes, and deter people from claiming asylum as a shortcut to regular immigration pathways. In addition to the one-year time limit, asylum claims from people who enter Canada between ports of entry along the Canada-US land border and who make a claim after 14 days will not be referred to the Immigration and Refugee Board of Canada. They note that guidance will be provided to officers to consider the individual circumstances of unaccompanied minors, given their lack of legal guardianship. Kingston Immigration Partnership argues that this new policy leaves some asylum seekers at risk.
For some individuals, this is not possible. For example, if you're a part of the 2S LGBTQ community, or let's say you're a victim of intimate partner violence, you might not report it or feel safe to come out within your first year of arrival to Canada. But if your home country doesn't have any protections to keep you safe, you might want to continue seeking safety in Canada. But unfortunately, you will no longer be able to make a refugee claim, with some exceptions.
And this is an extension, as you've referenced, to a City of Kingston policy that came into effect in 2017, which affirmed that Kingston residents should have meaningful access to city services without fear and should not have their immigration status reported to the Canada Border Services Agency or police. What do you hope with this partnership? Because I imagine that you're hoping to expand it in future.
Yes, so City of Kingston has adopted the Access Without Fear policy in 2017, which is a sanctuary city-like policy. And as a result, which is really great, we would like to expand it to many more organizations within the community. So we welcome and encourage all community organizations that serve newcomers who want to make sure that their services are accessible and let people know that they are welcomed to reach out to us.
And for an individual who might be hearing this and might feel like this is an opportunity to seek out services but might not know where to start, what would your recommendation be?
So those four agencies that we talked about earlier, they have affirmed that they will not report your immigration status voluntarily to CBSA or police. So if you do want support or need support, I would recommend you booking an appointment with one of the four agencies.
How long has this been in the planning stages for, and what has it meant for you and for the other agencies to come together and be able to make this declaration?
This has been in the planning for, I want to say, months at this point. It is something we are very excited about because it really shows our organizational values. We want to make sure that our services are welcoming to more.
I would imagine this is a really welcome announcement for a lot of organizations and a lot of individuals.
Do you have any concerns over backlash? Have you had any response from the community so far to this announcement?
Well, we have actually not received any backlash. There has been a lot of support, a lot of organizations and people who have reached out to say that they're happy that we've enacted like something like this. I suppose in the future we might receive some. But know that we understand why we are actually doing this and the community that we serve.
So what are the next steps for you and for the other groups? Is just implementation, getting the word out, I imagine, as well?
Absolutely. So the next step would definitely be implementation. And there is also ongoing training for all of our staff and any agencies that join on to this declaration. But what we really want other folks to know about and other agencies to know about is why we have this declaration and some information sharing and education.
And if people want to learn more about it as an organization, do they get in touch with you or reach out to any of the different partners? Are there resources out there?
All the options are great. We also have a webpage, but if you're also curious to know more information, we recommend you reaching out to our email address at info@kchc.ca. We're just so excited to share with our community about how we're working together to make it more welcoming for more people.
All right. Well, congratulations on the declaration, and I look forward to seeing how it expands.
Thank you, Era. Now over to Dinah Jansen with a story by Michelle Dory Forestell, LGI reporter for The Kingstonist, about the proposed timeline for the cleanup of a Bridge Street property in Napanee.
Thank you, Jesse. The town of Greater Napanee says it's continuing to work with social service agencies, police, and the owner of a Bridge Street property that was recently found by the court to be unfit and unsafe for human habitation. In a written response to the Kingstonist on Monday, June 1st, town communication staff confirmed that municipal officials have been holding regular meetings regarding 1388 Bridge Street following a court-ordered injunction requiring cleanup of the property. According to Kylie Huffman, communications coordinator for the town of Greater Napanee, those meetings have involved the town's chief administrative officer, fire chief, senior bylaw officer, and clerk, as well as Prince Edward Lennox and Addington Social Services, other social service agencies, and the Ontario Provincial Police. Huffman said the work the town has undertaken to this point has largely focused on steps for those living illegally at 1388 Bridge Street. The update comes after the Ontario Superior Court of Justice issued an injunction requiring action at the property, which the court found was unfit and unsafe for human habitation. The order requires the site to be cleaned up, but the town said it was working with partner agencies before proceeding with any enforcement that could affect people still living there. Huffman said the town has also been in regular contact with the property owner, who has indicated that cleanup efforts are underway. However, she said the town is not yet sure of the extent of that work. The town has previously indicated that if it is forced to take on the cleanup itself, the cost would be high. Huffman said that estimate has not changed. Huffman said the town will also need to inspect the property to assess its condition and will work with external agencies to ensure that the details laid out in the court order are adhered to and that community safety obligations are met. While the town does not expect to issue a public notice before any enforcement action, it does anticipate that there will be full reporting to council in open session about the steps that have been taken, are being taken, and will need to be taken, as well as any associated costs, Huffman wrote. The town also said CAO Matthew Grant is leading the municipality's efforts on the file. The response suggests the municipality is attempting to balance enforcement of the court order with the reality that people have been living at the property and may require support before the site can be cleared. While the injunction sets the legal framework for cleanup, the town's latest updates indicate that enforcement may, at least in the short term, depend on whether the property owner continues to make progress and whether social service agencies can help relocate any remaining occupants.
Thank you, Dinah, and thank you to Michelle Dory Forrestel of The Kingstonist for that story. Coming up, we have a story by Ted Evans, LJI reporter for CJAI Amherst Island Radio, with a fundraising update related to the W.J. Henderson Revitalization Project.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, local journalism initiative reporter and news director at CJAI Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca.
Loyalist Township has announced they've passed 80% of their fundraising goal for the W.J. Henderson Revitalization Campaign. With construction underway, donations continue to bring them closer to their $2 million goal. Volunteer and donor to the campaign, Jennifer, speaks about why she got involved and notes how donations can be made.
I believe spaces like this foster a sense of community. Even though I've only been living in Loyalist for a few years, supporting this campaign felt like a meaningful way to help ensure that everyone in our community will have a bright, modern space to connect, stay active, and make memories. A gift of $1,000 will be permanently recognized on our donor wall, creating a lasting legacy for you or your family. You can also make your donation conveniently in installments with automatic payments at the interval of your choosing. That's how I contributed to the campaign.
The township is preparing to reopen the Bar Homes Aquatic Center later this summer. The Dig and Dirt Atrium is closed to the public until June 8th. During this time, library access remains available. Until then, access to the center is provided via the lower level entrance by the arena dressing rooms. As the campaign moves towards completion, the township is looking back on the past 50 years, during which the building has served as a gathering place for the community. The township is inviting community members to share moments that have shaped the building's history. Photos, stories, and memories should be submitted by August 31st, 2026. All submissions will be entered into a free draw to win 1 free hour of ice time. Selected submissions may be featured on digital displays inside the center. For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
Thank you to Ted Evans for that story. Coming up, we have Genevieve Hinch reading a story by Keith Dempsey, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for the Brockville Recorder and Times, about local reactions to the possibility of a 4-day work week.
Thank you, Dinah. A new staff report headed to Gananoque Council suggests that municipal employees are generally supportive of flexible scheduling options, but indicates a town-wide four-day work week would present operational challenges in several departments. The report was prepared in response to a directive issued by Mayor John Beddoes in April, which directed senior staff to examine the potential advantages and disadvantages of flexible hours, compressed work schedules, and a possible four-day work week for municipal employees. The report found that many departments already use some form of flexible scheduling, particularly to accommodate evening meetings, emergency response requirements, and after-hour work. Several departments, including corporate services, finance, planning, public works, and utilities, reported that flex hours have proven beneficial for employees' work-life balance and can help staffers attend appointments or family commitments without using vacation time. Staff also identified potential benefits to compressed work schedules. Corporate services noted that extended daily hours could allow Town Hall to remain open later into the evening, while giving employees an additional day off. One option discussed would see Town Hall operate from 8:30 a.m. to 6 p.m., Monday through Thursday, potentially improving access for residents who work traditional weekday hours. The report also suggests modest operational savings could result from three-day Town Hall closure each week through reduced utility consumption, cleaning costs, and maintenance requirements. However, staff cautioned that a four-day work week would not be practical across all municipal operations. Public Works staff noted any permanent change would require amendments to the town's collective agreement and could create challenges during the winter maintenance season. Utility staff highlighted legislated seven-day operational requirements for water and waterway facilities, while Parks and Recreation Management warned reduced weekday staffing could affect service delivery and maintenance activities during the busy summer season. Gananoque Fire Service staff expressed support for continued flexibility, noting firefighters frequently work outside normal business hours for emergency calls, training, and community response activities. The department said flexible scheduling helps maintain employee morale and supports work-life balance. Economic development, tourism, and communication staffers also reported that their schedules already require considerable flexibility due to festivals, events, and tourism-related responsibilities, making a traditional four-day model less impactful than in other departments. The report does not recommend a specific course of action. Instead, it provides council with an overview of how each department could be affected by scheduling changes and identifies areas where further discussion may be warranted.
And thank you to Genevieve Hinch and Keith Dempsey for that story. Now over to Jesse Bell with the Kingston Sports Report, brought to you by CFRC Power Plays.
It was an eventful weekend football-wise here in the city of Kingston, as the Kingston Grenadiers had three home games on Saturday at Richardson Memorial Stadium. In the first of three games, the U16 AAA squad defeated Huronia by a score of 16-14 on a last-minute field goal, a clutch kick made by a high school-age kid. Certainly will get the scouts taking notice. In the second game, the AAA U18 Grenadiers had a much easier time with their opponents, winning handedly 48-10 over Sault Ste. Marie, locking up first place in the Eastern Division for the Kingston Grenadiers U18 squad. And then in the closer, the U14 Grenadiers had a hard-fought defensive stalemate of a 12-6 victory over the Durham Dolphins. A huge victory for the U14 squad as they look to fight for playoff positioning in the Ontario Summer Football League. Continuing on the trend of local football news, former Queens Gales linebacker Justin Pace has successfully made the Edmonton Elks regular season roster, signing his first professional contract late last week. While Pace will no longer be eligible for U Sports play, he is looking forward to a long and productive career at the professional level. We here at CFRC congratulate Justin Pace on his accomplishments, both in university and now in the realms of professional football. That's a wrap for your sports report brought to you by CFRC Power Plays. Over now to Genevieve Hinch with the community concert and events calendar.
And thank you, Jesse, for that update. And also thank you to our sponsor. Today's edition of The Corridor is brought to you by Kim Purcell of Sutton Group Masters Realty. Learn more about Kim and local listings for your new home via kimpurcell.ca. Coming up, Jesse Bell is bringing you the CFRC Environment Canada weather forecast for the Kingston region.
This is your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Tuesday, June 9th, the warmest day of the year so far here in the Limestone City. Sunny conditions, daytime high of 30 degrees, but it is going to cool off a little bit overnight as we have a 60% chance of precipitation in the forecast. Wednesday, June 10th, 27 is your high with a 40% chance of rain, dropping down to a 30% chance of precipitation overnight and a low of 17. Thursday, June 11th, another hot day, the start of a run of warm weather. 29 is your high with a 30% chance of rain, only going down to 22 overnight, so it's going to be quite warm even overnight here in the city of Kingston. Friday, June 12th, 29 degrees is your high with a 30% chance of rain, dropping down to 16 degrees and cloudy overnight. Saturday, June 13th, just in time for Pride here in the city of Kingston, we have got a beautiful 27 degree day with a mix of sun and cloud. Sunday, June 14th, there is a 40% chance of rain in the forecast with a high of 26. And then kicking off next week, Monday, June 15th, 27 is your high with a 45% chance of rain. Coming up next, we go back to Genevieve Hinch with CFRC's concert and events calendar.
Hello, Kingston, and welcome back to CFRC 101.9 FM. Broadcasting from Kingston, Ontario, I'm CFRC's Community News and Arts Coordinator, Jenny, and this is your weekly events and concerts calendar brought to you by Flying V Productions. Whether you're looking for live music, pride celebrations, community festivals, workshop theaters, or just something fun to do around the city, there's plenty happening this week, so let's get into it. On Wednesday, community events take center stage. Teens can head to Rideau Heights Branch for games and grub in the afternoon, while Kingston Nexus hosts a board game night beginning at 6 p.m. The Ground Up Dance Festival arrives at the Theatre La Sesame at 7 p.m. and showcasing contemporary dance and performances from across the region. Live music highlights include Glenn Jones, Liam Grant, and Jack Pine performing at Something Else Records, while Dan Byrne and Orit Shimoni take the stage at the Broom Factory later that evening. Thursday definitely keeps things busy with the Kingston Public Market running all day in Springer Market Square. The Central Branch Library hosts a Get Ready for Pride workshop, while Calvin Park Branch presents Roots and Remedies, exploring Indigenous teachings and traditions. In the evening, Drag Bingo returns to Daff Brewing from 7 to 11 p.m. Live music includes Mallory Chipman at the Cove Inn, Ted Lalonde at Time Out Bar, and KBS Monthly Jam at the RCHA Club. Friday is packed with entertainment across the city. Musiki Cafe hosts its live drag and burlesque from 5 to 7 p.m., while The Spire welcomes Canadian comedy and musical favorites The Arrogant Worms for a concert and music talk beginning at 7. Live music includes Orkstar Criminal at Hotel Wolf Island, Morgan Davis at the RCHA Club, and local favorite Squid Pistol performing at the Merchant Tap House later that night. Saturday is heading into Pride Weekend in Kingston. The community fair runs at Confederation Park from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., while Kingston Pride Parade begins at noon at the Memorial Center. Other highlights include YGK Beer Fest at Fort Henry, the Ukraine Folklore Festival at Regie, and an Ontario Serendipity Tour documentary screening at the Tet Center. In the evening, visitors can hop aboard the Out on the Queen Pride Boat Cruise, catch comedian Jeff McHenry and at Daff Brewing, or dance the night away at Glow After Dark at La Vida Bistro and the Gay Pride Dance Party at Bottoms Up. Wrapping things up on Sunday, the Memorial Center Farmers Market runs from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. The Kingston Pride Recovery Brunch takes place at Wharf and Feather beginning at noon, and nature lovers can join a guided walk with KNCLN starting at 10:30 a.m. Live music includes Hawksley Workman and the Wolves at Signal Brewery, followed by Head Over Heels performing at the Cove Inn's waterside patio. This has been your weekly events and concerts calendar for June 8th through the 14th. And for more information on any of these events, visit the CFRC website and keep it locked right here on CFRC 101.9 FM. This events calendar is brought to you by Flying V Productions, bringing live theater, comedy, and unforgettable entertainment to audiences across Kingston. Be sure to check out their upcoming shows and events throughout the season. I'm Jenny, and thanks so much for listening, and have a great week, Kingston!
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit cfrc.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via cfrc.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.
When it comes to Kingston real estate, local experience matters. Kim Purcell is an award-winning realtor born and raised in Kingston with over a decade of experience and 100 five-star reviews. If you want honest advice and results you can trust, choose Kim. Visit kimpurcell.ca today for more information.